Hi, friends. Welcome back to Welcome to Reality TV. It's Jody, and I'm back with a rundown of 90 Day Fiancé Before the 90 Days. I truly hope TLC knows that we're all watching because we need more. I'll also be filling you in on our ethereal Audge and her wonder baby, a quick update on teen mom Kale and her now named baby, plus a little addition to Easy Eats. Enough of this. Let's get started. Well, we have to start with the best, and that is 90 Day Fiancé Before the 90 Days. What an incredible episode, you guys. Although every episode has been pretty incredible and never is disappointed. However, my TV listing said it was supposed to be 2 hours in the finale, so clearly whoever typed that in messed up. And as annoyed as I was that it was only an hour, I'm thrilled we get an extra hour for next week. Thank you, sweet baby. Roll off Jesus. That's a little bit later. So let's start with Sean and Abby. We start with Sean in the Latin Quarter, where I am sure he is way overstayed his welcome and scared off every waitress in that place. And Abby's still heading back from the airport with Chris. Now, Chris is a smooth 64 with buttery skin and those puffy lips like Sean. Abby clearly has a type. So Chris is asking her, when can we talk without microphones? You're so cute. So do you have any plans to go to the States? Like, they're clearly doing some sort of small talk that they had agreed to, that they're both kind of on to. And Abby then does a voiceover and tells us that she had talked to Chris about Sean, and Chris gave her his blessing just to go for Sean, do whatever makes her happy. But then we jump back into the car, and Chris is like, doing this weird caressing, brushing her face. And Abby even looks at him weird and calls him on it. And he can only respond with, I'm on my best behavior. Ugh. Like, I felt like we were watching some sort of criminal mischief act go down on TV. So then out of the blue, probably just to fill in the voids of conversation, Chris says, oh, I'm so sorry you're miserable with that skin condition. Oh my God, if looks could kill, Abby's face, she shot daggers at him. So Chris then just keeps going because you could tell Abby didn't know what the hell to say. And he's like, oh, that's a classic case of scabies. Sean's going to need to get checked out and treated because you're just going to be passing that back and forth. Now, I'm sure we all knew it was scabies or some sort of disease being passed back and forth. But to actually hear it, oh my God, it was so satisfying. But that is some serious mastery level game playing and revenge on Chris's part. He knows what he's doing. So of course I had to go and Google all about scabies because this is what I do now. This is my life. And the first thing that comes up is how it's transmitted. And it says by skin to skin contact, handshakes or hugs with your vagina. So Abby is digging WebMD Chris because Chris is saying that the cameras have an inhibiting effect. And Abby immediately looks at the cameras, thinking they're off, and reaches over to hold his hand. Now, my heart went out to Sean right now because I am sure he is in Springfield, Ohio, sobbing, actually seeing that on screen. Now, he's been posting about the house that he's buying in Haiti for he and Abby. I wonder if that's still going to be a go after he sees this. So they arrive, Chris and Abby, in the Latin Quarter, and Chris has a huge wet spot on his crotchal region. It's not a lie. It was there. Go back and look. No, maybe that's why Chris like went to Haiti in the first place or why he loves it. Like he can get some good black market Viagra without FDA regulations. Or maybe that, remember the voodoo lady? Maybe she has some voodoo Viagra made of like palm fronds and frog pee or something. But either way, it's working because Mr. Chris has evidence of something working. Now, we come to the most awkward meeting, and you think Sean would have thought of a better transition, how to start the conversation, considering he's been sitting there for hours drinking every fluid known to man. But he's taken off guard because he says that Chris is arrogant. Now, I don't know if I'm in the minority, but I didn't think Chris was arrogant. I thought he was confident. And just a tip, if there's any men listening, confidence is attractive to women. So I think that is where Sean is misreading cues, and maybe that's what Abby is attracted to, this confident older man. Now, Sean goes Murder, She Wrote and asks where they met. And Chris says at a cafe in Puerto Plata. Oh, the wheels were turning on Angela Lansbury. And Abby apparently told Sean that they had met online. So immediately he asks to see her WhatsApp and she refuses. Shocking to no one but Sean. So it's at this point that Chris asks Sean why this friendship is so upsetting to him. Now, Sean tries to deny it, and he's like, I'm not upset. But then he turns it and says the line that they've been showing us in previews for weeks now, that Chris is poisonous to Abby, and Abby will never have a healthy relationship with any man as long as Chris is around. Now, that might be true, but Abby doesn't give a fuck as long as she has her American panty business and her bills paid by someone, probably Chris. Now, Chris is tired of this drama, and I don't blame him because I don't think he had any idea what Abby had gotten herself into with Sean. And he says, I didn't think it was going to be this confrontational. Good luck, babe, and leaves. Now, Abby screams, what does that mean? Abby, it means your meal ticket is walking away and you best be running after it. So she does, and Chris is telling the cameraman, I know that Abby is probably stressed right now, doesn't know what to do, she's making a big mistake. And Chris knows how much money he personally is sending her, so he knows what a big mistake it is for her. Because can't we all agree Chris is probably more well off than Sean? Now, Sean actually says something pretty meaningful here to the camera crew. And he says, your head might lie, your heart might lie, but your gut doesn't lie. Boom. Nevertheless, though, Sean scurries right after Abby and he runs into Chris and asks Chris when he's staying until. Now, duh, Chris is staying beyond Sean's, you know, time in Haiti. So then Sean starts in with Chris is using her for a sex toy. Hi, pot, meet kettle. In case you guys didn't know, Sean has a dating profile out there. He might have taken it down at this point because people have started looking into him. And on this dating profile, he says that he's into threesomes. He's into people watching while he's having twosomes, threesomes. I don't know this stuff, you guys. But now he's the one judging about sex toys. Come on. Sean's not dating Abby because of the prose she's reciting or the research that she's had published in journals. So Sean still doesn't get the hint, and he is tracking Abby down like a Sasquatch down the street. Abby is literally screaming, leave me alone, I have nothing to say to you. All right, listen up, guys, if there's any men listening. Trust her. There are only two times when a woman actually means leave me alone, I have nothing to say to you. And that is one, when she's breaking up with you, and two, when she wants to go to Target alone. Now, Sean decides that it's time to have a deep talk with her in the midst of Abby like freaking the hell out. And he says, I want a relationship with you. And Abby very clearly responds, I don't fucking care. So Sean says, you need to make a choice. Me or him, it's the man that gave everything up to be with you or the man. And Abby says, his name is Chris. Mic drop. That was epic. Now, all you had to do was give them some British accents, and that could have been a screenplay for Love Actually. Like, that was brilliant timing, classic ex-lovers quarrel. So Abby then leaves, tells the producers that she chooses Chris. I don't know if this is controversial or not, because I wanted to kind of keep my opinion to myself until the podcast and then hear from you what you thought. But now, if I were Abby, I would too. I kind of like Chris. Now, I don't think he's attractive. I don't think he's necessarily a great guy, But over the two of them, I would choose Chris too. They both have those lips that Darcy's trying to have. And I think that's my main point of contention with them. My mind just goes to gross places with those lips. So Sean is just ugly crying like Farrah Abraham on Teen Mom. And I feel bad for him for a split second. But then I remember that he's an older guy who sought out a young girl that's his own daughter's age. And there were so many red flags that I really hope that he's not with her now, like he has been alluding to online. Now, Abby posted something in the past day or two on some sort of group that I then saw a copy of. And I'll post it in the Facebook group so you can take a look at it, ask to join. I'll give you some information at the end. That kind of leads you to believe that Chris is in polyamorous relationships and that she found out that Chris wasn't a good guy, just like Sean had told her later on. I don't know about that, or I don't know if they're just trying to drum up ratings or viewership for the show. Okay, so enough of those two train wrecks. Let's move on to the next. Courtney and Antonio. Ugh, this chick. I saw potential in Courtney a few weeks ago, but then she opens her mouth and contradicts everything she says in her one-on-ones. This whole episode is about how Antonio is looking at other attractive women. She herself said, he's handsome, he has an amazing body, but he didn't make a good first impression. Isn't she herself basing her opinion of him on his looks? So he can't find other people attractive, but she's judging him on his attractiveness. Okay. So they're sitting down and Courtney starts in with the guidebook on how to lose a guy in 10 days. Number one, she starts with, my friends keep texting me about you. For Christ's sake, every man just loves to hear how the girl he's with has been talking extensively about him with her friends, and they're all feeling entitled to weigh in. Second on the checklist, she brings up, do you do porn? You didn't tell me, but my friends are telling me. Again, with the friends. Something tells me she and her friends are way too into Sex in the City and girls. Now, what I was thinking is, he is a model. You knew this going into it. I mean, is he supposed to pull out his Dear Diary from 2011 and recall all his photo shoots that he's done for the past 15 years with you? Maybe you should have done your homework before flying halfway across the world to see him. And then she says, I don't want to look stupid if you do porn, like my family and friends would see, and it'd be so embarrassing. First, you don't need Antonio to look stupid. Any of her Instagram lives and her travel expert Instagram photos prove that. Don't even get me started on her latest one on Chicago, because it's, if you haven't seen it, go check it out. This girl is clueless. Second, don't be desperate, Courtney. That's like the number one turnoff. And stop talking about your family. Guys do not dig that needy shit, and they definitely aren't getting a hard on talking about FaceTiming with your parents. Now, Antonio says one of the few smart things he said the whole time, and he says, if you don't trust me, you can go. In Spain, it's not that serious what he did. Now, I have two extremely close friends that are Spanish and live in Spain, and I have to agree with Antonio here. It's a different culture. Yeah, it's a conservative Catholic country, but they are more liberal with things like that. So we end up at a dinner with Courtney wearing the same dress, but in a different color. Did anyone else see this? It was like that Seinfeld episode where the woman keeps wearing the same dress and Jerry keeps trying to see her in different situations to see if she's still wearing the black and white dress. So Courtney sits down and she orders champagne because she thinks she's Heather Dubrow now, and immediately says, I feel like you were looking at the other waitress. Checklist. Friends, check. Criticizes career, check. Question the culture, check. Now jealousy. So then his sister calls or texts him, and she starts in with, does she know about me? My family knows about you. Does she know you're dating? That we're dating? You FaceTime my parents. You're dodging questions. Slow down, Fatal Attraction. Actually, Glenn Close might even be too mild. Like, she's going on to maybe Kathy Bates' Misery next, like tie him to his bunk bed and shit. So then Antonio starts counting to 10, and I got a little uncomfortable. It was kind of creepy. Like, is he going to tickle her? Is he counting to 10 because he's rating her, like when he was on the jury at the beauty pageant? Now, I'm thinking it was maybe just the only English he could think of at the time, and he was trying to make her lighten the frick up. But she pulls a Valley Girl and says she's going to go to the bathroom, probably to take a filtered selfie with animals superimposed on her face, and that he should get the check from his boo. Now, he probably did pay for the check and was able to put another check on your crazy ex-girlfriend checklist. After the jump, Darcy and Jesse Von Trapp. Doe, a deer, a female deer. Okay, Sound of Music fans, Jesse Von Trapp, the oldest Von Trapp son, is back with Darcy. Darcy starts out in her hotel room and she's making the bed. Now, I was shockingly surprised. I'm thinking, okay, I like Darcy because I hate people who live like slobs in a hotel room. So I'm thinking she can't be that much of a monster, Jesse. Then she acknowledges that Jesse has control issues, like we all said. Check. Okay, Darcy. And then it falls apart because she says it's frustrating with an L, frustrating. God damn it, Darcy. God damn it, Larry. Why? I was just starting to root for you. Now, Jesse is taking this argument more seriously than his mom takes smoking pot and weaving dream catchers. And he says that last night was absolute madness. She didn't want me to hold her. Well, no shit, Dutch Sherlock. I wouldn't want you caressing me either in your house of flames. Now, Jesse's karma is having the scene where he shows up to Darcy's hotel and he dramatically exits the minivan via the sliding door with his House of 11 trademark Darcy sweatshirt and that douchebag beanie. Now, he's come to tell Darcy that she must take responsibility for this or I'm out. Okay, Heidi Klum, she needs to take responsibility for what, a glass of wine? Shoot, I mean, I'd hate to tell him about my penchant for box wine sitting next to my fireplace in the winter. He'd lose his goddamn mind. Now, he's obviously bringing her makeup bag because there's no way that she would voluntarily be barefaced if she didn't have to, which I think she actually looks better without makeup, just younger, fresher. Stick with that look, Darcy. He sits down, and I'm starting to doubt that he's only 24 because he had some deep wrinkles in that forehead. Did you see that? Like, does he need Botox from Dr. Dubrow? Second Dubrow shout out. Wow, what am I thinking lately? So as my imagination was running wild as it is right now with the Dubrows and Botox, my aging theories, I'm thinking, and then Darcy snapped me out of it when she said that she was feeling claustrophobic. And then I see why, because he was full on leaning over her. He is a close talker. She was leaning all the way back onto one of the side pillows on the couch, full on double chin. Hey, we have him, girl, no hate. But he is physically exerting his controlling dominance over her. Now, she should have really used those horrible Leah Remini nude flesh tone nails just to claw the shit out of him. But she doesn't. She's just sitting there as Jesse's grilling her. And he's saying, even when you were drunk, I was there. I was not controlling you. You saying that is controlling. That's so manipulative how he was wording things. And he said, you were drunk. You know this very well. I need to ask you a straight question. And that is, you need to promise that you will never drink again. Now, Darcy is still cowering, leaning backwards because he's close-talking her, and she's got a Julia Roberts vein in her forehead like when she was in Sleeping with the Enemy. And then he starts giving us the sob story and how he knows people who are addicted, and he grew up with it. Now, I think he's taking a little bit of a leap here. It was a few glasses of wine, and obviously she made it to the hotel okay, and she's managing to raise her daughters. I don't think she's an alcoholic. But he says, if you can commit yourself, we can grow so strong. And she whispers, okay. Now, I would have gone full on Taylor Swift we are never, ever, ever getting back together. If someone said, I couldn't even have a glass of wine for the rest of my life, he's going to be the one that's driving her to drink. And you know what? If he were secure enough with himself and trusted her, he wouldn't have to be so controlling and dominate her actions so much. And if I were her, I would have asked him to throw that stupid beanie away and promise that he would never touch a lighter again. If he can commit to that, we'd be so strong. Fuck no, I can't stand this guy now. So Darcy says the one thing that I hope none of you and none of the people that I love and care about say when they just start dating someone. And that is, you fight for who you love. You know what? 9 times out of 10, it's the universe screaming at you to knock it the hell out if you have to fight that hard for someone that you love. Now, speaking of the universe telling you something, let's move on to the epic, epic couple that is Paul and Karini. Save the best for last, folks. Now, the first thing in my notes was, oh no, there's rollerblades. If there's anything more frightening than a pale skeleton in head-to-toe mesh and nylon, it's a pale skeleton on wheels. He damn nearly amputated that bystander woman's toes at least twice. And he's still in that disgusting mosquito repellent coat. I mean, his BO has got to be out of control, because there's no amount of Axe for Men or roll-on deodorant, because you know that's what he uses, like that old-school roll-on liquid band with that roller ball. And didn't he take like 300 pounds of clothes with him? Why is he only wearing that one outfit? Now, as they're telling us how they've been intimate, my mind, God, it just tries not to picture it, but it can't help it. My head just goes there. Am I the only one, or am I like just sick in the head? I snap out of it because I see Karini fall down and I see Paul lean over, and I thought, oh my God, this is how it's all going to end. There's no way that he can lift her up and help her up. I mean, he's one hamstring pull away from being hospitalized for weeks in the Amazon, and they have to force feed him insure to regain his strength so that he can make it home to share a bed with his mom again. But Karini is saying that she's confused because he hasn't brought up marriage and they've been having sex. Oh God, it like grosses me out to even say it. So I'll say they've been intimate, even though I hate that phrase too. They've been intimate. So now she's confused even more because now he's dropped the whole finger in the hole motion asking her to marry him. So he says he can't do that because she needs to know the whole truth about his past. And then we see a little clip of the foreshadowing of her telling him to put his phone away. So we knew it was coming soon. Now, even though we knew it was coming, it was so much better than I think what we are all dreaming it could be. He types in his little translator app, "You need to know I'm a convicted criminal. I've been to jail. I have a lengthy," I mean, did he really even have to use the word lengthy? I almost think he would have done himself favors not to say that. "I have a lengthy criminal history. I was in jail for 18 months for arson, and my ex has a restraining order against me." Now, I was aghast, and my fantasy football reality dream team started to form in my head. What if Paul was on A&E's 60 Days In? Now, for those of you who did not see this incredible show, it's already had 3 seasons. They're supposedly filming a 4th right now. And they had moles, like plants, in the jail for 60 days. And it blew my freaking mind. It was so good, so intense. But how the hell did Paul survive jail for 18 months? Do you think he ever dropped the soap? Don't drop the soap. Maybe that's why he's so skittish and he doesn't take showers. It brings him flashbacks of his prison life and prison wife. Or was he the prison wife? Okay. So anyway, Paul has a full-on legit panic attack and keeps saying he's sorry as he runs off. Now, oh my God, you guys, his run. He looked like Mike Myers on Saturday Night Live. Do you remember, "Philip, I'm a hyper hypo"? Look it up, Mills. But I could watch Paul flee on his little tiny skinny bird legs all day, every day. But Karini's left there on the steps, and she doesn't know if she's on a Brazilian pilot for Punked or if Paul was serious. So she goes chasing after him. Now, Paul, hearing Karini and the camera crew on his heels, scampers up that hill like a frightened golden retriever. And at that, Karini loses her Sweet Girl cover, and she starts with a, "He's crazy, oh shit." "There you are, girl. That's the girl I know and love." I mean, why didn't she say this shit when he was gifting her with stuffed animals? So she finally finds him clinging to a tree in a wooded area that reminded me of the movie Stand By Me. And he's chanting, "Don't let me go in the water. Don't let me go in the water." You guys, I call BS. There's no way in hell he was going to jump in that water. He was waiting for them to show up and save him from himself. Like, he's like having, pretending he's having a flashback and he's going to dive in the bathtub to save his mom's sinking hairball down the drain. So she manages to peel him off the tree, and he starts looking around like Jack Nicholson in The Shining meets Ramona Singer on the catwalk. And shockingly, Karini says she doesn't care about his record after they struggle over the phone for a little bit. But Paul still refuses to leave. I mean, what weird ritual is he going to do that he doesn't want to leave? There's something that, like, in his brain, OCD compulsively, that he has to do that he doesn't want people to see. I'm telling you, there's something. So finally, Karini is like, fuck this shit, and climbs up the hill in a crop top, mind you. That's like Spartan race stuff, people. And she mutters, "I hate you. I hope you know that." You know, like what every loving couple says as they're falling madly, deeply in love. So then the moment we've been promised in this sick, sadistic way all season. A freaking lunatic wielding a machete runs up and screams for Karini's cell phone. And the poor thing hands it over, falls to her knees, and the guy takes off. A cameraman runs to Karini, makes sure she's okay. And freaking Paul in his goddamn toddler temper tantrum. You know, Karini is the one that has a reason to break down, not you, you selfish twit. You're 34 years old. Pull it together, Paul. God, forget arson. This is why he's single. This is the result of helicopter parenting, people. Go on my soapbox here. Don't handicap your kids so that they need hairballs and dramatic foot chases to deal with their feelings. Now, Karini is understandably bawling. I'm not going to do this. I don't want to be with Paul anymore. I want to go home. And that's where the like biggest cliffhanger of all time, where they leave us. Now, I'm not sure how much TLC is going to be giving us next week, but Paul and Karini have had some interesting Facebook exchanges with each other and with other people online. It's hard to tell if they're playing things up for the public or if it's real arguments that they're having. I'm going to post it to the Facebook group if anyone's interested. And I'm also curious to see how TLC is going to wrap up all the loose ends for all the couples next week, because we really, truly don't have enough time to see everything wrapped up in a pretty bow like I'd like to see them. Has anyone heard if they're having a reunion or a tell-all? Or maybe they're leaving it open-ended to see how it's doing in the ratings before moving ahead with regular programming. But if this is all we're going to get, to that I say, thanks for the penis sheaths and memories and scabies, TLC. You know the way to this girl's heart. Let's see what's going on in the Instagram news world. Our Earth Mother Audge has been back lately, and she's had really only some minor boring shoutouts to other bloggers, with also some pop-ins with Jeremy from time to time. Jeremy got in some hot water the other night because he was flipping through a People magazine that they were featured in as the stars of Little People Big World. As he's flipping through, he made some little comments like, "Oh, yeah, boring, boring, boring." And then he stops on the page that he and Audge and baby Ember were featured on. Apparently that upset some people because he took it down and made an apology video. I mean, it was so stupid. It's stupid that they were even in the magazine. Now, for as many Instagram photos, captions, Bible verses that Audge had on her and her baby during her pregnancy, she sure doesn't have anything to post or anything good to say at all now that this baby is here. We've only heard how hard she's had it and how she's had, quote, all the things. Well, yesterday, Audge posted a photo of just she and Jeremy before the baby, before the pregnancy, an old throwback photo of the two of them in the pumpkin field with sepia filters as usual, saying how glorious pumpkin season is and they're so glad it's here. And then she quoted my beloved Anne Shirley from Anne of Green Gables. So help me, Audge, do not steal one of the few pure things in my life. There will be no essential oil to clear the energy I will be sending you. That is a warning. Now, as a parent, to me, it was like one of the most exciting times to take your new baby, first fall, first pumpkin photos, and they live on a freaking pumpkin farm. Now, I don't want to hear that, oh, their new parents didn't have time to go and all that. It's only October 1st, 2nd. No, Jeremy has been posting incessantly about the start of pumpkin season, and at least he is on that damn farm every day. I think Audge just will not let that roll off clear and get their hands on that baby. This chick is full of spite. Always more spite, always more reasons to discriminate, always more reason to hate in the name of God's rubies and bounties, right, Audge? Now, another annoying attention-seeking mom is Kale from Teen Mom. Last night, she finally announced the name of her third baby from her third baby daddy. The baby is 2 months old, and she announced on Instagram, Lux Russell, 8.5 pounds, 17, blah, blah, blah. It only took us 7 weeks to decide a name and 8 weeks to make it official. Lux Russell, L-U-X. It sounds like a female hygiene product, right? Like it's for the classy woman who wants to be discreet. Lux, now with more absorbent patented fiber technology. How do you even nickname that? Like you got to think of nicknames when you're naming your kid. Lux, Luxer, Luxy, and you also have to think of what it rhymes with because it's just going to happen. Lux, Tux, like the hemorrhoid things. Good job, Kale. Just a tip for you youngsters who haven't had babies yet or maybe you're brainstorming some names for your kid. A coworker of mine many years ago gave me this advice and it stuck with me and it's always held up. When you're naming your kid, you have got to think of that name at the top of a resume because you don't want to name your kid something that's too trendy, too cute, too little sounding, too many E's and Y's and all that stuff because at some point they're going to be out there working and they've got to be taken seriously. And if the only thing that people are going on is their name and it's something ridiculous, that's the first impression. So Lux Russell, it sounds like Thunder from Down Under stripper or something, right? Anyway, I'll have a few more tips for you in Easy Eats coming up at you next. You know how they say you can never trust a skinny chef? Well, take that same logic and know that you can fully trust me on this one. I am a big fan, pun intended, of those Samoa Girl Scout cookies, or in some regions, I think they might call them Caramel Delights. Those little bitch brownies are hawking those things for $4 seasonally. Okay, I won't even buy them for my own daughter who's a brownie. It's a racket and my willpower will not let them win. So run, I tell you, to your nearest local grocery store and get yourself some Keebler Coconut Dreams in the yellow package, not the fudge covered coconut dreams. Those are imposters. I don't care what anyone says. They are even more delicious than the Girl Scout Samoas. They're half the cost and you get four more cookies. Come on, when you only get three sleeves, those extra four cookies mean a lot. And you can get them, they're available all year round. you're practically saving lives if you buy them, because those little elves can't keep the treehouse lights on by their hopes and dreams alone. I also tried a new wine called Entwine, E-N-T-W-I-N-E, Entwine, Pinot Grigio. It's a 2015 California white wine. I got it for $7.99 on sale. It's normally $8.99. It can be really tricky, some of these cheap wines, but I have to tell you, it is so tasty. A lot of Pinot Grigios, I find I don't like them just on their own. I have to be snacking on something, crackers or a meal, but this one is actually very good on its own. It's very green, apple-y or citrusy, so I guess you kind of have to like that acidic wine. It's much more delicious than like Flip-Flop or Barefoot. I'm not big fans of those. So if you're not fans of Flip-Flop or Barefoot, give this one a try. Entwine. I'll take a picture and post it on Facebook. It's kind of hard to describe the label. So pick up some cookies and wine and let me know if you find anything good and tasty that I should try and share. Well, that does it for today's episode. Thanks so much for joining me on this journey today. I can only hope we have many more journeys down the Amazon, or better, next week when the new season of 90 Day Fiancé premieres on Sunday, October 8th. Just a heads up that I will be tuning in to A&E's new series, Undercover High, starting on October 10th. It's going to be a docuseries that it's kind of like Never Been Kissed, the movie with Drew Barrymore, where they have 21 to 26-year-olds, and they're going to plant them as undercover high school students. It looks really super interesting, so please plan to watch with me, as I'm pretty sure I'll probably be recapping that one. Find me and each other on Facebook and Instagram, Welcome to Reality TV, drop the Y out of E, Twitter at Reality TV Pod, or you can find all those social media links at welcometorealityv.com. Remember to rate, subscribe, share with a friend. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.